This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 300. For the weekend of September 1st through September 3rd. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office, this podcast where we talk about movies, TV, and other stuff that entertain both myself and my co-host Art. Art, how you doing?
I am doing well. I am transitioning to a new office, and so I could not be in better spirits.
Well, good. Good. I'm glad to hear that. A little business first. Our website is backseatproducers.com. You can find all our episodes of this show and Backseat Producers at the website. There's also the voicemail number, or 618-207-4794. You can also like and or follow our Facebook page, Backseat Producers. There's also, we have Twitter accounts. Art is Art Santos Jr., or at Art Santos Jr., and I am at JB63. Okay, that's enough business. I guess we should go on to some other business, which is the first part of the show is we talk about what happened at the box office last weekend. And since we were off a little bit, no one really hasn't heard any of the movies that we're about to talk about, but we're just going to forge ahead anyways. So, for last weekend, which was the weekend of August 25th through August 27th, here's your top five. At number one, in its second week release, The Hitman's Bodyguard came in at $10.3 million. At number two, in its third week release, Annabelle : Creation at $7 million. A new release, at number three, we have Leap! At $4.7 million. At number four, we have Wind River in its fourth week release at $4.6 million. And at number five, we have Logan Lucky in its second week release at $4.2 million. So there's your top five. Just a quick recap. $10 million, $7 million, and $3.4 million.
Total gross $40 million for Hitman's Bodyguard on a $30 million budget. That's not bad. It's kind of like they took a shot in the dark, put a couple of big actors in it. $30 million budget with those two actors, they must have got them for a song.
Or they just wanted to work together.
That could be, yeah, totally. Yeah. No, I could see that.
I was just looking at the weekly box office because, you know, we'll talk about later in the news, but aren't very rosy right now in Hollywood as far as the movie studio is concerned. Because if you look at the last 6 weeks, starting at July 14th, $234 million, then $266, $210, $166, $150, and then this week at $116.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So something's going on here, folks. I don't know what it is, but something's going on. All right. Speaking of something going on, Art, why don't we transition, I guess that might be the word of the week, from what happened last week to what's going on this weekend. So why don't you tell us what's coming out in the theater this weekend?
Well, in actuality, by our standards, nothing is coming out this weekend. And I can't believe how dead. It's a holiday weekend. How is nothing releasing this weekend? I mean, I know a lot of kids are also going back to school, like, last week and this week. I was going to say, I think that could be a consideration and a downturn the box office is taking. People are getting their kids back into school. A lot of people, less people going to the theater in general. But I've never, it feels even more dramatic than usual, but I don't really pay that close of attention. This is the first year I've had a kid in school to notice exactly when the kids are going back to school. So we decided to talk about the one new movie that is having a okay release. I think it was 700 theaters. We talked about this before. Tulip Fever. It has no tomato meter rating available. 88% want to see it out of a small 4,000 users. In the 17th century Amsterdam, an orphan girl, Alicia Van Vikander, is forcibly married to a rich and powerful merchant, Christoph Waltz, an unhappy arrangement that saves her from poverty. After her husband commissions a portrait, she begins a passionate affair with the painter, Dane DeHaan, a struggling young artist. Seeking to escape the merchant's ever-reaching grasp, the lovers risk everything and enter the frenzied tulip bulb market with the hope that the right bulb will make a fortune and buy their freedom. So we've talked about this time period before because there is a game also based in this era called Tulip Mania. And it's a very interesting period in history where there became this speculative market on tulips, of all things. There was like a stock market specifically for tulips, and rare tulips were going for crazy prices. And at some point, the bottom completely falls out of it when somebody says, you know, we're buying and selling flowers. It sounds interesting. The time period is very interesting in what it kind of entails economically. But I don't think this is anything I'd be seeing in a theater. This is something I'd probably catch on cable or maybe...
How's this not on PBS? That's what I want to know.
How's this not on PBS? This totally looks like something could totally be on
PBS. I mean, because this is the Weinstein Company. They probably bid big money to get this, but yeah.
It could be a BBC thing, too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's, you know, true, too.
It is taking place on the other side of the pond.
People, I mean, it is R, accents, you know. So apparently tulip, you know, there's a lot of, you know, it says R, sexual content and nudity, but.
Right.
But, yeah, well, I don't know.
Flowers and, you know, makes me think of, like, Georgia O'Keeffe and is that too deep a reference?
I think so.
Okay.
Think so. I'm just looking at some of the character names. Did we talk about Dane DeHaan's character?
No.
Jan van Loos.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And Christoph Waltz is Cornelis Zandvoort or Sandvoort.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Zach Galifianakis is in it, and his character isn't even named.
Interesting.
Yeah, I got so distracted. Judi Dench is in it. I didn't go over who else is all. Let's see. That's all I really recognize.
I recognize Tom Hollander. He was also in The Night Manager.
Okay.
He was also in a couple of the Pirate of the Caribbean movies.
Gotcha.
David Harewood. I think he played Martian Manhunter in Supergirl.
Oh, interesting. I still haven't gotten around to that one, so yeah. I need to dig into that.
Yeah. Usually at this point we would say, hey, here's some of the vitriol from, but there's only two critics. John Louis from The Straits Times, Singapore, a stiff, disjointed movie, 2.5 out of 5 stars. And David Jenkins from Little White Lies, one you'll want to expunge from your mind as quickly as possible. He went with one out of 5.
Wow. That's pretty sad. I won't be rushing out to see this, no matter how interesting the theme and time period might be.
Yeah. So there's a couple of indie movies that I might try to track down once they hit the library or Netflix. One is I Do Until I Don't. It didn't really catch my eye too much until I saw it was written, produced, and directed by Lake Bell. And I enjoyed the last Lake Bell movie, In a World, which was a romantic comedy about, you know, the voiceover movie trailer, you know, subculture kind of thing. And right. Then the other one is, I don't remember if I talked about it before, but The Layover. This is a movie that's directed by William H. Macy. And it stars Alexandra Daddario and Kate Upton as two women that are kind of have to take the same flight together, but they're both after the same guy. So it's kind of this big competition. I mean, the tone of the movie looks something right out of Shameless, which is a show that William H. Macy's been on for, what, years now?
Yeah, long time.
But yeah, it looks pretty funny. Even though I don't know how much directing William H. Macy has done. So, yeah, we'll see. So those are two movies that were kind of interesting. Okay, so that's our look at what's coming out in the theater this weekend. So now let's move on over to share time. So yeah, share time. This is the part of the show where Art and I talk about what we've been watching. And since we've been off 3 weeks, there's a lot of time. So hopefully we've been busy. But first, this is where we play voicemails from our listeners. And we do have one voicemail from Tad. So again, thank you, Tad. And here he is now telling us what he's been up to.
Hey, Backseat Box Office. This is Tad calling in again. First, Jeff, just pick a movie for me. I keep thinking I'm going to get around to doing that, and I'm just not. Just pick one for me for the contest there. Let's see. What have I been watching? Oh, yeah. Jeff talked about The Founder. So I went to the library and got that and watched it. And I'm always kind of fascinated about, the history of things, like McDonald's and how it came to be and how, it just spread like that. And from what I understand, the movie's fairly accurate. So I got that. I like that. Let's see. I've been watching The Flash. I'm into season 3 now. That's pretty good. Still watching Killjoys, and liking that. That's still good. Let's see, what else have I? I can't remember right now. So I'll watch some more stuff and call in next week. All right, thanks for the show, guys. Bye bye.
All right, thank you, Tad. So much you enjoyed that, and I'm so behind with Killjoys, even though, it's only this one season, but I got to start watching that again.
I thought it was on the second.
This is season 3.
Okay. You sure you're one season behind?
I'm one season behind. I watched season 1 and season 2. But I've been catching up on something else, which I'll get to in my share time. So again, thank you, Tad. And Art, what do you got?
Okay, so I also have been wanting to watch Killjoys, so I'm glad for the continued updates on where he's at with that and enjoying that, and I really do want to get around to that. Like I said, I found it on the on-demand section, and so I really need to check that out. But things I have been doing. Okay, so I started Atypical, which is about an autistic boy, kind of a coming of age tale. He's becoming an adult. He's trying to he's in high school. I think he's a senior, maybe a junior. He's got a younger sister who I believe is a freshman or a sophomore. But she is not autistic. So she is the more, not necessarily mature, but just the one who kind of helps keep things in check. But it's very well done. I actually got a Netflix survey, and I went through it. It was huge. It took me 20 minutes to get through. But one of the things that they focused on quite a bit was Atypical, and I didn't know if that had to do with the fact that I had started watching it but didn't finish it, or if it's just one of their more hot properties currently, and it's getting a lot of downloads, because the email actually came out before the next thing that I got onto, which actually stopped me from finishing Atypical, was The Defenders. I am on the 7th episode of The Defenders, so I haven't quite finished it yet. I will probably wrap that up as soon as we get off the airwaves tonight. But I am thoroughly enjoying it. The kind of the broad overview, top things I'm taking from it so far is I really kind of do think Luke Cage is my favorite. I really do, like a lot of people, kind of hate Danny Rand. And the last thing is, don't mess with Stick, because he will mess you up. He's got he has, I think, inherited Samuel L. Jackson's wallet from Pulp Fiction, being a BAMF. But anyway, so I'm really thoroughly enjoying that. Can't wait to finish that up. Still watching Voltron with Aubrey and thoroughly enjoying that. I watched our apartment complex. Did a movie night out on the large green area behind the apartment complex. They bought a big, huge inflatable screen and a projector and a nice sound system, and they put out hot dogs and chips and drinks and made a whole party of it and probably had a couple dozen people there as we watched Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I did not get to finish it because Aubrey was a little too antsy and wasn't super into it, and so we ended up coming in. So I watched most of it. I'm going to have to pick up my own copy now and finish it. But what I did see, I did enjoy. So there is that. And I think that's about it between working through Atypical, Guardians of the Galaxy, and The Defenders. I feel like there was one other thing I was watching besides Voltron that I can't seem to remember right off the top of my head. I guess I'll just save it for next week. But that about wraps up my share time, sir. How about yourself?
Okay, my share time, I have to give a little background first.
Okay.
This weekend is Gateway 2017, which is the third of three game conventions that the Strategicon, I don't know if it's a corporation or... that they put on, and I had such a good time playing GURPS with Mook at the last one. Nice. I made it a priority to get into his next game, and I found out from a little birdie that he's doing a Game of Thrones game in GURPS. I don't know jack about Game of Thrones. Basically, 3 weeks ago, I started watching Game of Thrones.
Oh, my goodness.
I've been watching Game of Thrones basically as much as I can.
Okay.
Now, I've always known that I'm going to watch it, but I was kind of waiting until it was over.
Right.
Kind of thing. So, every Christmas season, Amazon would have their 50% off. So, I bought season one, then season two, then season three. So, I bought one every year. Kind of.
Okay.
So I've blown through seasons 1, 2, 3, 4.
Wow.
I finished 4 this last weekend. I had some reward points from being an Amazon Prime Visa member, and I also had to empty my change jar. So at our grocery store, they have a Coinstar, and so if you put your change in, usually they charge you 8% or something like that. But if you get a gift card, there's no commission on that. So I just get Amazon gift cards because I buy crap off of Amazon all the time. So
right.
Between the points and between the change, I was able to cover season 5 and season 6, which came yesterday.
Nice.
And so I'm 2 seasons into season 5. I am really enjoying Game of Thrones, but it's kind of reinforcing the different experience that you have when you binge it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, because when you're just watching it one day a week and things aren't going the way you want it to, or they spend too much time on a character that you're not really into, you kind of get upset with certain things. I'm really enjoying Game of Thrones. I kind of went in with the same attitude as I did with Walking Dead. Is don't get attached to anybody because they're all going to die. which, I mean, to some degree that has happened. But I'm enjoying the story. A friend of mine who is a big Games of Thrones fan has basically said it's like a fantasy Godfather, because family is a huge part of Game of Thrones, kind of thing. I'm really having a hard time avoiding spoilers. And one of the things that, because I've always been on the periphery of Game of Thrones fans and fandom kind of thing, I've known certain things that have happened because, it's all over the internet.
Right.
Kind of thing. And there's one part that happened in season three, which I knew was going to happen, but I didn't know the particulars. And I told people that I'm watching season three, don't say anything. But I've been at work, and I went into the back where no one's supposed to be, and these two staff people, they almost followed me and started talking about why she stopped, because she couldn't handle it when blah, blah, blah died. Kind of thing. And I was like, oh, come on, man. Because usually, you know, I kind of have the same attitude as you do. You know, I'm at an age right now where even if I hear a spoiler, I'm probably going to forget it by the time that I watch it. So it's, you know, it's not that big a deal, but I mean, the Blu-rays are definitely worth it because they have some really great special features that kind of fill you in on things that might have been covered in the book, that might not be covered on TV. But they have, in my estimation, some great characters. I had to show my son one part because it's basically why you need a healer. And boy, Peter Dinklage, I understand why he's won every award that he has. I mean, because it's just great. He's a great character, and he's very good at making him sympathetic sometimes and very unsympathetic sometimes. But they did, I think they've done a great job casting. I wasn't much of a Lena Headey fan, but she owns this role. And she's really good. I recognize some people from Harry Potter. Mm. And one little spoiler is the guy who played the janitor for Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Is the biggest freaking tool in Game of Thrones.
So he excels at being a tool.
Oh my god, dude. Oh my god. Yeah. I'm really enjoying it, and hopefully, you know, I probably only need to watch a couple episodes to prepare for the Game of Thrones GURPS game. But I've just gotten engrossed with this, and you know, it's kind of interesting because where they're at now, they've gone past where the actual books are.
Right.
So there's that whole thing about the writing's kind of went in the toilet, and. And, you know, you always have that fear about that something's going to happen to the author where he's not going to be able to finish it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But, you know, things happen. So I'm really enjoying Game of Thrones. Hopefully, probably in a couple weeks, I'll be caught up to the end of season six, and I'll just have to wait for season seven to come out on Blu-ray. But yeah, so I feel some level of gratitude to Mr. Mook for pushing me towards enjoying this great property. And that's really it. I haven't even watched Defenders.
You know, you get your singular focus. You've chewed through five seasons or four and a half.
Yeah. So I mean, the numbers on that is there's 10 episodes a season.
Okay.
So it's been like.
And they're about an hour long.
They're about an hour long. They end up at about 55 minutes, okay. Which is it's a little strange because HBO no commercials, even though there is a 2 minute credit sequence, and of course there's credits at the end.
Right, and they gotta have their intro and outro and set up for the next movie coming on after that's over and blah blah
right.
blah blah.
Right.
So yeah. Get your buffer. Okay, well that's good. It's another one on my list to kind of get to eventually. I watched, I think, like most of the first season, and then kind of just moved on to other things and just didn't get enthralled like everybody else. I think I'd be more likely to maybe get the book on audio and do it that way. Yeah, I might have to try that.
Yeah, I know you listen while you work, but I've tried listening to audiobooks, but usually when I commute to and from work, I don't know, I need something a little more lighter where I don't have to pay attention to details.
Right.
Kind of thing. I've actually stopped listening to podcasts because I recently purchased a new vehicle, so I have Sirius XM, and I'm addicted to the stand-up comedy channels.
Okay.
So I'll probably, when that trial runs out, I'll probably jump back on the podcast bandwagon.
The funny thing is, I don't actually listen while I'm commuting. I only actually listen.
No. I understand that. You do it at work. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you would think I would do both, but I don't. So it's
Weird. If you don't have a long drive, I mean, then it's
no, it's a half an hour drive. I'm like, meh, I don't want to listen to that. Why? I don't know what it is, because I know I'm going to listen all day long at work. I don't listen to. I'm off for the next 4 days. I won't listen to a single podcast.
I'm the same way. So. I'm the same way. Usually, if I'm not going to or from work, podcasts do not. I could very well when I'm riding my bike on the bike path for an hour, I could very well listen to a podcast. I would listen if I was doing something like that.
Or I used to listen when, you know, back when we had the house and I was mowing the grass. I would listen while mowing the grass. You know, or if I was doing some mindless, menial work like my job, then I listen.
Yeah. All right, and that's going to end my share time and this entire segment of share time. And so now let's move on over to news. Art, how are you going to educate our listeners?
Okay, so I saw this little news tidbit and it caught my eye. Spider-Man Scribes returned for a new sequel. So screenwriters Chris McKenna and Eric Summers, who worked on this summer's Spider-Man Homecoming, are in final negotiations to return for the upcoming sequel, which John Watts will once again direct. The pair were two of six writers with credit on the film, but are the first ones for the follow-up of the movie, which grossed $737 million worldwide. So, there you go. Writers are coming back, and hopefully they can do more of the same, because I thoroughly enjoyed Spider-Man Homecoming.
Me too. Okay, my first news story, we're actually going to kind of piggyback onto something we were talking about with the box office results.
A world filled with technology, Spectrum delivers. With superior...
Is that you or me?
That was me.
Okay, all right. Okay, so let's talk about Labor Day weekends. So usually back when I was doing fantasy baseball, when you're kind of evaluating a player, you kind of look at the three-year average. So I went back to 2016 and 2015 to kind of look at the two, what was Labor Day last year or the year before that. So I'll start with 2015. So the top five for 2015, we had War Room, was $13 million. Number two, A Walk in the Woods at 10. Straight Outta Compton at $10 million. Number four, Mission: Impossible Rogue Nation, 9.4. And then The Transporter Refueled at $9 million. And A Walk in the Woods and Transporter were both new releases kind of thing. So that wasn't that great either. Now, if we go to 2016, a year ago, number one, we have Don't Breathe, two, Suicide Squad, three, Kubo and the Two Strings, four, Peach Dragon, and five, Sausage Party. And all five of those movies were in its second week, fifth week, third week, fourth week, and fourth week release. So Labor Day, at least for the last 3 years, has not been great. So maybe that's why studios will avoid that weekend.
Yeah, seems that way. Like I said, I wonder if the driving factor is the returning to school, because it's just right around that time frame when kids are going back into school.
Usually
people aren't staying out so late.
Another thing is football starting, usually Labor Day weekend.
I feel like those aren't the same people, but I think that's just my own perspective.
Yeah,
you
never know.
Yeah.
All right, Art, what do you got next?
Okay, so this one caught me out of my side. Live-action Mulan aims for January start. So in their continued push to do more and more live-action remakes, looks like Mulan is the next one on the list. So Disney is reportedly aiming to begin production on its live-action remake of the 1998. That is almost 20 years. What? Beginning in late January. Shooting will take place in China, New Zealand, and Australia. Nikki Caro is slated to helm the project, which she has described as a muscular piece of girly martial arts extravaganza in China. New Mulan is expected to soon announce a release date, which will be sometime in 2019. So it is still a long way off. We will see where this comes up over the next coming years.
Okay. I'm going to keep hammering this box office thing. So my new story is from Dark Horizons. It was the worst box office in 16 years. So we kind of already talked about some of the numbers, but they're not looking forward to great numbers this weekend. According to Dark Horizons, Tulip Fever is a wide release, but it's not going to do anything. And they're saying the weekend after that, Stephen King horror adaptation, It, is probably headed for maybe a $60 million-plus opening, which, you know, without the nostalgia factor, I don't know if a lot of people would be going to see that. But they said by the time Labor Day is over next weekend, the domestic box office is expected to be down 16% for the year.
Wow.
And they say the steepest decline in modern times. Attendance is also expected to hit a 25-year low. On a good point, international box office has been saved, has somewhat saved a few titles, up 3% overall. So, so yeah. All right. Art, what you got next?
Okay. This one, I don't even know what to say about this one. James Cameron has drawn a social media black backlash following comments about Patty Jenkins' recent Wonder Woman film. Cameron, who has famously written some of Hollywood's strongest female protagonists in times when there were few, tells The Guardian he wasn't majorly impressed. All the self-congratulatory backpatting Hollywood's been doing over Wonder Woman has been so misguided. She's an objectified icon, and it's just male Hollywood doing the same old thing. I'm not saying I didn't like the movie, but to me it's a step backwards. Sarah Connor was not a beauty icon. She was strong, she was troubled, she was a terrible mother, and she earned the respect of the audience through pure grit. And to me, it's so obvious. I mean, half the audience is female. 5 times married, Cameron has understandably drawn ire on social media for his mansplaining comments with Jenkins. Jenkins now issuing a response via Twitter. And I thought this was pretty good. James Cameron's inability to understand what Wonder Woman is or stands for to women all over the world is unsurprising, as though he is a great filmmaker, he is not a woman. Strong women are great. His praise of my film Monster and our portrayal of a strong yet damaged woman was so appreciated. But if women have to always be hard, tough, and troubled to be strong, then we aren't free to be multidimensional or celebrate an icon of women everywhere because she is attractive and loving. Then we haven't come very far, have we? I believe women can and should be everything, just like male lead characters should be. There is no right and wrong kind of powerful woman. And the massive female audience who made the film a hit it is can surely choose and judge on their own icons of progress.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So kind of continuing the theme of box office and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I found this article on cracked.com last week, and they have 6 once popular movie genres Hollywood doesn't make anymore. So, you know, we always hear, or we always see, you know, we have prequels and sequels and reboots and all this other stuff. But here's 6, a quick tour of 6 genres they don't make anymore. At least it seems like. Number 6, we haven't had a good whodunit since 2001. And so he kind of breaks it out under each of these bullet, or each of these items as what we used to have. Clue, Rear Window, 10 Little Indians, Gosford Park, and screw it, we're going to say Murder at 1600. What we have now, one movie, Murder on the Orient Express, provided it doesn't blow a turd, is what he's saying.
Yeah, well, can't argue with that.
Okay, number 5, monster movies. What we used to have, Alien, Predator, Jaws, They Live, The Fly, Tremors, The Thing, The Terminator, Pitch Black, Army of Darkness, The Mummy, the one from 1999. What we have now, The Mummy from 2017. Alien Covenant, Cloverfield, Underworld, Resident Evil, giant monsters and zombies galore. Would be reckless to say that there hasn't been a great new original monster in a while, as films like Attack the Block and The Babadook feature exactly that. But when you compare the last 20 years of the genre to the 20 years before that, it's clear the well is drying pretty damn fast. The 70s through the 90s featured a grotesque renaissance of action-slash-horror monsters, which ranged from everything to killer sharks to aliens to robots to Kevin Bacon hunting sand dicks. none of which were typical of what came before. Films like The Thing and Alien drew most of their horror from the sheer nightmare-inducing design of the titular threats. As of late, however, big-budget adventure horror tends to be neither of those two things, containing unchallenging terror coupled with tenseless action. Okay. So that was number five. Number four, big-budget romantic epics used to be a thing. What we used to have, Titanic, Gone with the Wind, Dr. Zhivago. What do you have now? Avatar? So, and they apologize. I'm a big, stupid fan of Dr. Zhivago. The movie's 4 hours long, cost a fortune, spans 50 years and several wars, and is primarily focused on the love between two people. So, yeah, we don't see... The last one I can remember is, like, Australia?
I don't know. That had some magical realism to it that was... And it was half comedic, half romantic, and it had some other problems, too. I don't know. But I'm just being honest.
No. I'm sorry. I'm reading ahead to see if there's anything. Because I don't want to read all his commentary. But
right.
Okay. Well, I get that Hollywood doesn't want to take the risk of dumping millions in the love stories. It's kind of baffling when you consider that some of the highest grossing movies ever, like Gone with the Wind, were all exactly that. I mean, Lady and the Tramp was the second biggest moneymaker of the 1950s, and that film is about dogs giving each other doomy eyes over a plate of trash spaghetti.
That is true.
Okay, number three, the devil doesn't show up in horror movies anymore. What we used to have, The Omen, The Exorcist, Rosemary's Baby, Angel Heart, The Devil's Advocate, The Ninth Gate, The Prophecy, and let's throw in The Devil and Max Devlin. What we have now? Devil, The Witch, The Exorcism of Emily Rose wasn't bad. Was Constantine recent? Jesus, that was more than 10 years ago. He says, which, like with the romance epics, is baffling considering that some of the most iconic films of the genre are biblically flavored.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two, slacker hangout comedies keep getting older and older. All right? Here we have, Clerks, Animal House, Empire Records, PCU, Dazed and Confused, American Pie, Superbad, Dead Man on Campus, Ferris Bueller. What we have now, Old Guys Being Old, The Hangover, 21 Jump Street, Neighbors, Dirty Grandpa.
this is pretty well thought out and hard to argue with.
Okay, so look, you're never too old to shotgun a Black Label behind a Lowe's parking lot, but typically there's an age cutoff for when that... There's an age cutoff for when that kind of activity goes from being a wild streak to hitting rock bottom. Even when featuring a 30-year-old John Belushi, these films are set around schools or hangout spots associated with party-down type of hip cats. I'm talking real groovy swingers. Then we have a film like The Hangover, in which the crazy fun weirdo is played by a 40-year-old Zach Galifianakis, and the characters range from middle school teacher to a dentist. I get that part of the fun is seeing people normally associated with stuffy authority figures go bananas, but we kind of already saw that a few years before this, and the gimmick is wearing off real fast. Number one, dumb spoof comedies forgot how to actually spoof things. What we used to have, Naked Gun, Airplane, Austin Powers, any Mel Brooks movie, Hot Shots, Don't Be a Menace to South Central While Drinking Your Juice in the Hood. What we have now, Vampires Suck. All those blank movies that came after Scary Movie and the comedy stylings of Seth MacFarlane stealing David Zucker bits.
Ouch.
Yeah. So there you have it. Six genres that Hollywood doesn't make anymore. All right, what you got next?
Yeah, that's pretty indicting. All right, this caught my eye. The DC Animated Universe, Gotham by Gaslight sneak peek. So there is a sneak peek of the upcoming Gotham by Gaslight animated movie on the Batman and Harley Quinn animated feature, which is out now. It is widely considered to be the first of the Elseworlds series. Elseworlds is something DC did where they kind of it was kind of their line of what if. Do you remember What If from Marvel? Have you ever read any of the Elseworlds series? Okay. I actually read this comic, Gotham by Gaslight. And it is Batman taking on Jack the Ripper in the 1800s. So it was actually a really good comic and very interesting. And I'm glad to see they are doing an animated movie for it. So I'm excited to see what that brings. And so I'm going to have to go pick up Batman and Harley Quinn. A, to see Batman and Harley Quinn, and B, to see this this teaser trailer or whatever clip may be coming up for that. Has my interest peaked?
All right. I'm going to go with this one. Okay, so io9.com, a couple weeks ago, their article has the best movies of the summer of 1987 ranked. Okay, so you want to take a stab at what they had, what came out in 1987?
Ugh, no clue.
Okay, all right. So I'm gonna go bottom up.
Okay.
According to your list. Okay, so at number 18, they have the Garbage Pail Kids movie. Okay.
That just got covered on How Did This Get Made?
Everything about it just feels dirty and scary, but not in a good way.
Uh-huh.
Number 17, House 2, The Second Story.
I remember that one.
16, Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Oh, jeez. So bad.
Number 15, Jaws, The Revenge with Michael Caine.
Was that the one in 3D?
Mm-hmm.
And the third one, yeah, with the Screaming Shark? And,
yeah. I don't know if that one, it doesn't say 3D.
Okay. Okay.
Number 14, Benji the Hunted, where he's trying to rescue a litter of orphan cougars. And those are actual cougars, not women in their late 40s and 50s.
Right, exactly.
Number 13, Masters of the Universe. One of the biggest wasted opportunities ever came when right around the peak of He-Man popularity, Hollywood released a Masters of the Universe movie. And, by the power of Grayskull, the casting was great, with Dolph Lundgren as He-Man and Frank Langella as Skeletor. But a low budget and terrible script turned what could have been awesome into nothing more than a punchline. Yeah, we went to the theater to watch this, and I laughed through the entire thing.
I remember it. It was very disappointing, very sad. I love that cartoon.
Number 12, Back to the Beach.
Uh-huh.
Annette Funicello and Frankie Avalon star as an older married couple going on vacation who are forced to reclaim their former beach-bound glory. It's terrible, cheesy 50s throwback nostalgia, but growing up, I loved it, probably in large part because of the cameos, including Pee-wee Herman. I probably watched this way too many times, but this is one of the few ones I remember. Number 11, Harry and the Hendersons.
Mm-hmm.
Number 10,
John Lithgow.
The Brave Little Toaster.
Yeah. Jeez.
It was kind of Toy Story before Toy Story.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Number 9, The Living Daylights.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have that's top 10. Roxanne.
Uh-huh. Steve Martin.
One of my favorite Steve Martin. Number 7, The Witches of Eastwick.
Yeah.
Number 6, The Monster Squad.
Uh-huh. Wolfman Has Nards.
Mm-hmm. Number 5, Spaceballs.
Yeah.
Number 4, Inner Space.
Yep. Dennis Quaid.
Dennis Quaid and Martin Short.
Martin Short,
and
yeah.
Meg Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Do I need to leave you alone for a while? Number three, the Lost Boys.
Yeah.
Number 2, Predator. Predator would have been my number 1 based on the year. But number 1, thank you for your cooperation, RoboCop.
Nice. I have seen every one of those movies.
I think I'm about 80%. Because there's a couple on here I haven't seen. So what does he say about RoboCop? What else can you say? Paul Verhoeven's incredible film about a man on the brink of death, reincarnated as a cyborg police officer, remains as shocking as entertaining now as it was 30 years ago. The violence is still scary and the social commentary still crisp. Yeah, that was released on July 17th, 1987. So there you have the top 18 movies of 1987.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say about that. But yeah, 87. I was 14.
I was 17.
And we had cable, so all those things eventually came around. Things I didn't see at the theater, I definitely, Taking me back, man, taking me back. All right, speaking of going back, this article headline really caught my eye. Study. millennials don't like pre-1970s films. Really, why is anybody surprised by that? A recent poll conducted by online retailer FYE.com of both 1,000 millennials and 1,000 Americans over the age of 50 has revealed that those classified as millennials, born in late 80s, early 2000s, are not fans of classic films. Who is surprised by this? I can't get Brittany to watch anything old. A study found that less than 25% of millennials have watched a film from start to finish that was made pre-1960s, and only 33% have seen a film from the 1960s. Just 30% admit to never having watched a black and white film all the way through, with 20% branding those kind of films boring. In fact, only 28% in the study have seen Casablanca, 16% have seen Once Upon a Time in the West, and just 12% have caught Rear Window. Millennials also tend to lie a lot more about what they've seen, with 30% admitting having felt social pressure to lie if they have seen an old classic in its entirety, as opposed to 3% of the over 50s. Just this whole article is it's hilarious. And it makes me think of that kind of the big conversation kind of blow up when backseat producers watched, 2001 A Space Odyssey?
Mm-hmm.
And you definitely had that dividing line of the younger people versus the older people. The ability to appreciate something that moves a little slower, takes its time, you know, kind of builds. So, we live in an age where we want everything now, we want it quickly, and we don't want to wait for it at all.
Yep. All right. My last news story is kind of half a news story. You remember we talked about Bright?
Uh-huh.
So there is another fantasy-based drama that's coming to, it's going to be coming on Amazon. This is a TV series. It's called Carnival Row, and it will be starring Orlando Bloom. So the story is set in a neo-Victorian city in which mythical creatures fleeing their war-torn homeland have gathered. Tensions are simmering between citizens and the growing immigrant population. Bloom will play Rycroft Philostrate, a police inspector investigating the murder of a fairy showgirl. Doing so will come out at a big cost. So Paul McGuigan, I apologize for mispronouncing your name, is set to direct and also executive produce along Travis Beecham and Renee Echevarria. The legendary television produced first season is slated to run 8 episodes with filming beginning this fall. Travis Beecham sounds familiar, so I'm just going to do a quick... Rider Pacific Rim. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But anyways, another fantasy cop show, even though this one's in the 17th century or 18th century.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting.
Okay, and once again, speaking of things old, Fantastic Voyage on hold due to water. So they are updating Fantastic Voyage, and it is being done by Guillermo del Toro.
Mm-hmm.
But it is currently being put on hold because he's working on a period fantasy romance called The Shape of Water. So that is going to push back him working on Fantastic Voyage. So I didn't even realize he was working on Fantastic Voyage. That's one of those 70s classics that mm-hmm. I've seen probably multiple times. Actually kind of a precursor to Inner Space, which just got mentioned.
Yeah.
Just interesting how it all ties together. So I'll be looking forward to see what Del Toro does with The Fantastic Voyage. I actually read the novel at one point, or a novelization, one or the other.
Yeah. According to Wikipedia, Fantastic Voyage was 1966.
66, okay.
Raquel Welch, Donald Pleasance, and Arthur Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
All
right,
and
so
that's all I have.
Yeah, I am also out of news, and so that's going to end this episode of Backseat Box Office. So thank you for listening to I don't know if this is going to end up as episode number 300 of Backseat Box Office. So thank you everyone for still listening, and Art, thanks for between family and everything else, figuring out, some time to record to keep this ship afloat. I'm having a great time, and we'll get trucking on 301 next week.
There you go. I enjoy doing it as well, sir. Thank you.
All right. So, everybody, again, thank you for listening. Tony Mass, thank you for keeping the lights on our website so we can still have this show. So we appreciate that. And other than that, everyone take care of yourselves, and we will catch you next time. Art, any closing remarks?
Have a good night. Go watch something. Tell us about it.
All right.